Station number 870.
General Birx, Real One, could you tell me what part of the country you were brought up in and tell me a bit about your family?
I was bred and born in London, but my parents came from Yorkshire. I went to school in London. I went to University College School. And I left there in... I walked out in 15. In those days, you got nominations for Sandhurst from the headmaster. And he turned mine down because I was under 18. And I thought, well, the war would be over. So I enlisted in the Territorials in London Rifle Brigade in January of 15. And I've been on ever since. I married in, after the war, in about 1920. My wife was daughter of an Indian Army colonel. She was directly connected with Elliot, the defender of Gibraltar. So that's the only military side of the family. I've got one son.
What about your own father? Was he an army man?
No, he wasn't. He was what you'd call a businessman.
What sort of business?
He had six children. He was brewing.
Yes.
But he had six children, so he was all right. He lived to 92, which was a good age.
A very good age. Did you plan early on to have an army career?
No, I was going into medicine. I was working for London Matric to go into a London hospital. But the war came along, and of course that changed it completely.
Before you went into the tank corps, you saw service in France with the London Rifle Brigade as a private soldier.
As a rifleman.
Yes. What effect did your experiences in France have on your attitudes to the general conditions of trench warfare? Did it affect you significantly?
What way do you mean?
Well, as a private soldier, did trench warfare, the conditions on the Western Front, make much of an impact upon you?
Oh, it did. It made a very great impact. It was not fear so much, it was just loathing sort of local conditions, the filth. One was lousy, for instance, for about 6 months on end. And you got clean shirts from issued, and they were lousy too. One hated that sort of business. And it wasn't the danger so much, that was bad enough, but it was the dirt and the filth and the walking about. I didn't like that, because an infantryman then, you walked everywhere.
You were wounded on the first day of the Battle of the Somme.
Yes.
Could you tell me a bit about your experiences, in your personal experiences, in the period leading up to the first battle and on the first day itself?
Yes, I was in... I was a lance corporal then, and we were divided up into small, what you'd call now, task force. And my job was to put the wire in this beyond the third German line, the barbed wire. And I had a party of 12 men, and we went across in the third wave, the third assault wave, and one just was a beast of burden. One wasn't a soldier. We had sort of two pickets, wiring pieces, a coil of wire, and a rifle, and two extra bandoliers of ammunition, and a haversack ration, and a change of clothes on the back of it. You walked over this muddy, broken ground, hoping nothing would happen. And it didn't, of course. We were all right. We had two waves in front of us. And I got to my place beyond the third wave, got my wire out pickets done, and then was returning to company headquarters when I got hit in the arm. And the thing was organized disorganization. men milling around all over the place, and my company commander sent the wounded men back with their prisoners. There were a lot of prisoners. They were getting in the way and they were a nuisance. And I came back with the prisoners. I got them back to regimental headquarters, and then I was evacuated.
I see. While you were a private soldier in France, before you got wounded, did you come into contact with tanks at all?
With tanks? Mm. There weren't any tanks. See, I finished my private soldier on the 1st of July, 16, and came home to England, and there were no tanks out there then. One never heard of them at all.
Oh, so it was later in the Battle of Somme that they were...
Well, flares, you see, was the first time they were used, and that was September the 16th, which was two months later on.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you got back to England, you were in hospital for a period.
Yes.
And you were selected for officer training at this stage.
Well, I was selected before that, and I'd had my interview in France, and my commission papers were all signed up, and they followed me back to hospital. When I was discharged from hospital to a thing called London Command Depot, my papers came through then, and I was transferred to the officer cadet battalion at Cambridge.
I see.
So that had all been completed before the battle.
Would you tell me, in as much detail as you can remember, how the appeal for volunteers, which you answered, for the Secret Service, took place at Cambridge?
How did that appeal for Secret Service?
When you were at Cambridge in the OTC battalion, it was at that time you volunteered for tanks.
Yes.
Could you tell me a bit how the appeal for volunteers was posted at Cambridge and what were the reactions to it?
I'm not quite certain, so long ago, the exact details, but our company commander put a notice on the board saying that volunteers were required for a new branch of the army, and only those who were picked men would be selected. And we gave our names into the company orderly room, and they took very few of us. We were told nothing about it except that it was a new service. Of course, rumour being what it is, one guessed it must be them, because they'd just come out then. It was just getting common news that they'd got tanks. And we were, as far as I can remember, about a third of us were selected.
How was the selection done?
I'd like to think on merit.
But, I mean, did they have interviews and tests and things
No. It was done by the company commander. Cumberledge was our company commander. He did it. We went and saw the commanding officer of the officer cadet battalion for a brief interview. But that's all. And then we were sent down to this new OTC at Pirbright.
During the selection procedure, did you get any impression that particular kinds of skills were being looked for?
They did ask for people with mechanical experience. But of course, in 1916, nobody had got mechanical experience at all. No, very little indeed.
How much information was given about what you were volunteering for while you were at Cambridge?
They gave us absolutely none at all. One just sort of volunteered for it. Really, personally, I volunteered for it because I was sick of walking about France, and I thought the infantry work was no good to me at all. And that's my own thing. I knew nothing about tanks.
What was the scale of the response to this appeal for volunteers?
It was quite heavy. As far as I remember, the most of my compatriots did volunteer for it.
I see.
And I'd like to think they picked the best.
Now, you went down to Pirbright in October 1916.
October 16.
Take me through the details of what happened to you from the point when you arrived?
Well, Purbright was a hutted camp. I don't know what had been used for. I think the guards, it was in the guards area, they used it. And it was the most disappointing place I think I've ever soldiered in the whole of my service. It was filled with officers, infantry officers, who knew nothing about tanks, very little about machine guns or anything like that, and very little idea of really training young men. It seemed to be a hardening process. We spent most of our time running about the place, carrying machine guns and so on and so forth. Lectures were a minimum, and higher military education was just missing completely. We did a lot of machine gun work. We had no mechanical experience at all, no mechanical teaching. We went on like that for 6 weeks, and the first bunch were passed out. They were really passed out as fit for officers. They did nothing to do with tanks. And the second bunch went about Christmas. I went with the second bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a thoroughly badly run place. Strange enough, mostly people in rifle brigade would do the NCOs and so on and so forth. But the NCOs had no knowledge of teaching. They were ordinary sort of what they call drill sergeant type.
How much did you learn, how much more did you learn during this period about tanks?
I learned a lot about machine guns, nothing else at all.
I see.
Nothing.
How much more did you learn at Purbright about the kind of work you would be going on to do?
I can't recollect learning anything at all there. Except, as I say, machine gun, but we did a lot of that. We did quite a lot of work on the ranges.
Yes.
But the ranges were quite familiar with me because I'd been in the school shooting eight for some years. We'd been down to the Ashburton.
From Purbright, were all of the young officers under training posted on to tanks, or did they weed some out?
Oh, they weeded a lot out. I think fully a third. And they were returned to their original officer cadet battalions. They went back after about 6 weeks.
Did you get any impression of what grounds they were being weeded out on?
Unsuitability. Which is all very, very unsatisfactory, because they were unsuitable. I think looking back on it, most of those that went, they hadn't got it up above, or they weren't keen enough. They weren't keen. That was really the answer. They were fed up with Purbright. It was a bad place. It turned out all right afterwards, but it, like all those new shows in the inner war, nobody really cares about them.
You were posted to Bovington in December 1916. What was the size of the group that you were posted to Bovington with from Purbright?
Say it again. What was
the group that you went to Bovington with from Purbright? How big a group was it? How big a group? How many men?
Oh, I think you're about 20.
Mm-hmm.
I think we went in groups of about that. That's my recollection. I wouldn't swear to that.
And how many young officers appeared to be under training at Bovington altogether?
Bovington had two battalions here which were training, and then they had this depot, and they had an officer's company in the depot, and there must have been about, it's a biggish mess, must have been 30 or 40 of us.
I see. Now tell me in as much detail as you can, from the moment you arrived at Bovington, what your experiences were, what kind of things happened to you. Just tell it to me as a story.
Well, it was a tented camp then with the administration of the messing huts were huts, and the snow was on the ground. It was Christmas time, and we just mucked about for about the first few days. And after we were organized into groups, and the as your turn came up, the turn of your group came up, you went down to the tank park and did the first of the tank courses, or you went down to the gunnery school, which was down at Bovington that time, and did the gunnery, and you did 6 weeks on each. And you just prayed in the morning and walked, marched down there and did your course, and then came back again. The very little organization of games or anything like that. But it was a very free and easy place.
Mm. And what facilities had been put together at Bovington as far as tanks and other equipment were concerned for you to train on?
Well, they had a big shed which was called the Driving and Maintenance School, and in that they had some skeleton engines, and they had a tank hull, and we were taught on that. And further along up the camp, they had 2 6-pounders on concrete pedestals, and they were for instructional purposes. And that's about all they had down there. They had later on they had a pigeon school. They had a pigeon course that lasted 4 days. It was rather fun.
I see. What sort of people were your instructors?
Well, they were very good. Bovington was very good. The D&M instructors were all people who'd been with the machine gun corps, motor machine guns. They were the early tanks. Most of them had seen service overseas, flares and so on. And the general standard was good. The gunnery, I can't remember. There were quite a number of naval instructors on the gunnery school. We had naval 6-pounders. I don't remember very much about the individuals there.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the various courses you did, starting with the mechanical course? What do you remember about that?
Knowing how frightfully ignorant I was, I knew nothing about it at all. And if you didn't get through the thing as an officer, you had to get a class 1 or class 2. Then you were what are called a turn to unit. You were transferred to infantry. And there was a frightful sort of sweat over that. The gunnery was more simple, and most people got that. You did a 6 weeks course on that.
How was the gunnery organised? What kind of range work did you do?
Well, no ranges here. There was just a miniature range, and they had a submachine gun sub-rifle inside the 6-pounder. So you fired a 303 into a bank instead of the 6-pounder. And you would, there was very little to learn on that because they hadn't got the tanks here. One could just learn, working a 6-pounder gun is just nothing. Just work the crank handle and you put thing in and put him up again.
These were the very early days of the ranges at Lulworth. How much had they been developed by this stage?
Well, they hadn't. They built up some of the ranges, the bases of the ranges, in March 17. And an officer party was sent over to help pitch the tents and generally do the general mucking about it was Easter, because I was one of the people who went over. There was no transport, we had to walk. It was about 6 miles. Much moaning about that. We marched over to Lulworth. We pitched the tent with troops. We had a tea party, and they all blew down that night. I remember that perfectly well. It was a frightful gale. And the next night we moved into Cove Hotel, put ourselves up. We put in for lodging allowance because there was no other place, and it was disallowed One of my standing grievances against the authorities, they owe me 15 bob a night for two nights, and I never got it.
Now, we haven't talked about the driving course, which was obviously a crucial part of the training. What machines did you drive, and how were you introduced to the tanks?
When we came back from Lulworth, we then did the second half of the driving mechanical course, which was driving, and we had about, we formed a crew, they formed officer crews, and I think we had about 20 minutes each, and that was the end of the driving.
So what did it involve exactly? Your first experience in a tank, it must have all seemed very new and surprising.
Well, we were told where to put the levers and how the thing went, and then the corporal in charge of the tank sat up in the officer's seat. The officer sat in the corporal commander's seat, and you just drove it. If you hit the ground too hard, went over too many bumps, you heard curses from the rest of the crew, and you didn't do it again. And that's about all it was. I mean, it's very elementary, very simple.
This pigeon course you've mentioned intrigues me. Why did you have a pigeon course?
Because tanks in France had a basket with four pigeons in, and it was the only means of communication to get back apart from a runner. And the pigeon course was just to show you how to write the message, how to fix the little capsule around the pigeon's leg, and how to let the wretched bird out. And it worked. They got back. They were a bit slow, but they did get back.
4 days seems rather a long time to be taught so little.
Well, it's unkind now to look back too much, but there was no impetus about the thing at all. It was all very leisurely. It got too many people too quickly with too little facilities. And so you had to sort of spread it out to keep them occupied. Mm. You had officers everywhere. Rather like the RAF. Just littered with them.
Did the pigeons prove to be effective when you came to use them in operations?
I used the pigeons in the Ypres salient, and they got back all right. But if you let a pigeon out about 7 o'clock in the morning, you had to do it in daylight. Then about 7 o'clock in the morning, and they got back their pigeon loft at, say, Army or Corps, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It didn't help very much, it was a little bit dated. But they got back, quite a lot of them got through.
Did any of the instructors at Bovington have experience of using tanks in operations?
Some of the driver instructors, the officers in the driving maintenance school, they had been to action, and some of the NCOs had too. They mostly decorated, those NCOs. They had been in the first lot of tanks. Fine chaps.
Did you get any impressions from them about how effective the tanks had proved in Western Front conditions?
I don't remember any at all.
No. What did you think? Looking back now, what do you think about the training? Did it seem to be well organised and effective?
So long ago, it's difficult to be emphatic about it. If you get a large bunch of untrained people to train in a specific subject in a very short time without any materials, there's bound to be a muddle. And there was an awful lot of waste of time, there's no doubt about that. But particularly superimposed on all this, there were two battalions that were being trained as battalions.
I see.
I think everybody was sort of willing, but there was too much congestion.
Yes. It's terribly interesting for me to try and conceive how, with so little experience of with so little history of tanks. I mean, this was months after the first time they'd been used. The organisation of a course to train people to work in tanks must have been extremely difficult because no one had any experience at all. Did you feel like pioneers very much?
One felt rather isolated at Bovington because it was a prescribed area. They had mounted police on horses galloping round the outside and so on and so forth. You wanted a pass to go in. But one had no sense of sort of pioneering, but one did when one got to France.
Yes.
You quite definitely, you're quite different to anybody else. Rather proud of it.